Jump shot. It's good. Zach Randolph does it again. 3-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
First team all defense. First team all defense.
Here's Gasol from outside. Tony Allen. Shot clock at four. Randolph puts it up. Puts it in.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Grizzlies podcast. As always, we're your hosts. I'm Mark Kane. Got Sean Coleman on the line. What's going on, man?
Not much, dude. Just glad to talk with you. Trying to stay positive, but there's more cons than positives right now, but we'll get into that.
Yeah, the Grizzlies lose yesterday or last night to the Pelicans. A game that we talked about on the show yesterday that was we felt like was a must-win game, and they didn't win a must-win game. So we're going to talk about that game on today's show. And kind of where they go from here, but let's get right into it. That you're right, there wasn't a lot of positives. There was a lot of negatives. I feel like you could have if you guys wanted to listen to the yesterday's show and replace all the Spurs with just Pelicans, you could probably get this same result in terms of what happened with the Grizzlies and the Pelicans yesterday, just because it just was a repeat. I started off the show yesterday by saying the Grizzlies didn't look like they wanted to be there, or they didn't look like they had it that day. And it kind of felt the same yesterday too. It just did not look like they were willing to be competitive against the Pelicans. And I said the same thing yesterday. They would go on these little runs, but they would never complete them. And it's just so frustrating to watch that type of basketball. And, you know, as much as people like to complain about Dylan Brooks, Dylan Brooks' fault early in the game, because he got in foul trouble like 2 minutes or two fouls within 2 minutes, and he was out of the game. So, you're right. It was frustrating to watch. There's not a whole lot of positives to take away. I think there are a few positives, so we'll talk about that again on this show today as well. But there's not a lot. There's not a lot of positive. It felt like we were watching the same movie over and over again.
Agreed. You know, we had talked about in the San Antonio game, the one difference I will say, I do agree with you that the performance were very similar. But in the San Antonio game, I'm more frustrated about that than I am this Pelicans game, because in the San Antonio game, it felt like that all we needed was that one, 2 to 4, 3 to 5 minute run, and we could have had control of the game. In this Pelicans game, though, just in all honesty, they are the ones who kept us in the game. Like, the Pelicans had their opportunities to put us away. Like, this easily could have been a game where the Pelicans were, they won by 15 or 20, but it still highlights the same issues that we saw from the Spurs game. In the Spurs game, like we had talked about, the Grizzlies got out-rebounded by 10. The Spurs made 9 more free throws and 5 more threes. When the Pelicans game, the situation was the same. Basically, the Grizzlies again got out-rebounded. The Grizzlies attempted 14 more threes than the Pelicans, yet the Pelicans, and also just in general, 11 more shots, yet the Pelicans won by 10. And a big reason why they won by 10 was because they made 11 more free throws. But the Pelicans were 24 for 39 from the free throw line. The Grizzlies were 13 of 15. There were 24 more free throws. Now, I can understand if you have the perspective that that's a bit much. I can see that. Maybe the calls were a bit in New Orleans' favor. But my bigger issue is the fact of the 14 more threes. The Pelicans played to their strengths. They went inside, went to the rim, got, though the Grizzlies scored more points in the paint, the Pelicans got more quality looks, and that led to their opportunities at the free throw line. It led to them being more consistent from the field, and that's what allowed for them to get the lead and continue it. The biggest takeaway that I have from these three games is that with Taylor Jenkins, it just seems as if he has this, I don't want to say refusal, but for some reason, he does not have the trust in using Valanciunas, Clark, Jaren Jackson. He, for some reason, just doesn't have the trust to design plays to get the ball down low and score. And that's what this Grizzlies offense needs. The threes are not falling. That's just evident. The threes are not there right now. So to combat that, you've got to be able to come up with schemes and strategies that give you the best chance to score. That's getting the ball down low. And even if it is harder to score in the paint against these more talented teams, you at least up the chance that you're going to get to the free throw line as well. So that, for me, is my biggest takeaway from these three games as a whole so far. The Grizzlies, we know their strengths in transition and in the paint, and they're not getting the transition opportunities, and for some reason, they're not focusing on creating plays to get the ball in the paint either consistently, and it's frustrating.
Can I just say that the fouls is it's total bullshit. Like, the foul discrepancy in this game, it was just total bullshit. The fact that you have a team that shoots shot 39 free throw attempts to 15, more than doubling. It's just stupid. There's no way that you can go through a game and sit there and say, John Morant didn't get as many foul calls. But nonetheless, I digress. Even with that, John Morant shooting 1 for 10 from three, it's just not going to work. Like you mentioned, the threes are not falling. You have to do something different. As John Morant, you have to recognize that. The reason they're going under every screen to the free throw line, not even like a little bit. They're like, that was the Pelicans' strategy. We're going to pack the paint. We're going to protect the paint, and we're going to make you shoot threes. And the Grizzlies did. They shot 12 for 43, 27% from three. That is the issue. And Ja Morant has to be heady enough to realize and say, okay, this isn't working. The best part of our offense is when I penetrate, draw the defense in, and then we get quality looks. You saw in the third quarter, they had some of their best in-rhythm threes, and they made them. They had John Morant drive into the basket, and he was kicking out for threes, or someone else. You know, there's any drive. It was John Morant two times that I'm thinking out in my head, but it was in several possessions in a row, and they got threes in rhythm in the offense, and they made them because they were wide open. Like, those are the threes that you want from the Grizzlies. You don't want Dylan Brooks just jacking up a three. Like, those are not good shots. Those are not good threes. And that's how this offense is designed. That's how Taylor's offense is designed to work. And like you mentioned, like, he doesn't run stuff to get stuff down low because that's not how this offense is designed. Whether for good or bad, that's just not what he's trying to do. And you saw there in the third quarter as well, they went to Jonas Valanciunas like three times in a row, bam, bam, bam. And he scores every single time. And then because Dylan Brooks is Dylan Brooks, he decides, I'm going to dribble on the left side of the arc and just jack up a shot. And it was a long rebound, and they made a transition bucket because of it. And they never went back to Jonas after that. And for whatever reason, it's like, I understand what you're saying. Like, at a certain point, like, this is what's working clearly. Like, I think even Brevin said it on the broadcast. You do this until they can't, you do this until they stop. Like, if you find something that works, especially in a playoff series or a playoff game, like these are basically, like, you find something, then you do it until you can't do it anymore. And I feel like they would find things that worked, and they would immediately go with him. Whether that's John Morant getting into the lane, or that's Jonas Valanciunas. I mean, they would find things that work, and then they would just be like, I don't know, they would forget. I don't know. It's so weird. They would just go away from those things all of a sudden in different possessions. That's just what they did the entire game.
No, and that's the thing that I'll say is that, you know, I'm not one. Obviously, Taylor Jenkins knows a lot more about what he's doing than I do, as he does for a lot of folks that, you know, are commenting on the Grizzlies and things like that. But it's just, to me, I get the goal that Taylor Jenkins has for the offense. It's pace and space. you know, be able to create transition, be able to penetrate and allow for that to create space, especially when the Grizzlies in general have a lack of shooting talent. That's when you say, you know, you don't want Dillon jacking up threes. You want the space to be created by your best players playing to their strengths, which is Ja Morant penetrating in the paint and us down low. But also, I do feel that sometimes you just have to keep things simple. You've got to go away from what ideally would work through your schemes. You know, I'm the one who's constantly talking about, you know, off-ball movement, passing out to three. You know, that only works, though, if it's being executed correctly. Sometimes it's not. And so, basically, you've got to know when to just basically abandon that and just keep going to the well that works. That was down low with Jonas Valanciunas. That's with Jaren Jackson Jr. finding mismatches on one-on-one opportunities. The thing about it is yesterday kind of worked out as I expected with Ja Morant. Lonzo Ball and Jrue Holiday are a nightmare matchup with Morant. They're just bigger guards who are arguably better defensively than they are offensively at times, and it was just not a good matchup for Ja Morant. So the Grizzlies had to find other ways to be able to score points. It was exposed. Matchups on Derek Favors, outside opportunities for Grayson Allen, and then letting Jaren do what he can do, they just didn't go to that well enough. I mean, Grayson doesn't have the first half that he has. This game could have been, you know, the Grizzlies could have been behind 20 easily if the Pelicans are making free throws. So that's the thing that I'm getting at, and I agree with Brevin, and I agree with you. You've got it when you're down the depth that you came into this bubble hoping to have as an advantage, you've got to exploit mismatches and trust your best players. And right now, the Grizzlies are just not consistently doing that for whatever reason that may be.
I think you're absolutely right. We're going to continue the conversation right after this break. It doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete, a stay-at-home parent, or you spend 8 hours a day in an uncomfortable office chair, everyone needs support to make it through the day. Luckily, our friends at CBDMD have an amazing duo that can help you relax, regroup, and recharge when your life gets chaotic. CBD Freeze with Menthol is an award-winning product that offers instant cooling relief for muscles and joints in a convenient and easy-to-use roller or shareable squeeze tube. CBD Recover combines CBD with inflammation-fighting compounds like Arnica and vitamin B6 to give you the support you need where it matters most. And to make it even easier to try this amazing duo of topicals and everything else CBDMD has to offer, they're offering all our listeners 25% off your next order when you use the promo code NBA at checkout. Once again, that's CBDMD.com, promo code NBA for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD oil products from CBDMD. Welcome back to Locked On Grizzlies. That's possibly the hardest promo read I've ever had in my life. Shout out to our sponsors, but that's a lot of letters and a lot of different combinations all at once. So I think I nailed it, though.
You did. I was impressed.
I was too. I'll be honest with you. I've been practicing that quite a bit. I want to pick up where we left off. You said some pretty interesting things in terms of where the offense flows, and I think you're right. But I think that Ja Morant's got to be smart enough to know that, he's got to be smart enough to realize that. But it's also like on the coaching staff to prod him and push him in the right direction, right? Like, if Ja Morant's out there and, like you mentioned, the bigger guards are a nightmare matchup for Ja Morant. He's had trouble with that all year long. He's got to be able to at least try to attack. Like, and he got complacent. Like, he just settled. And that's like one of the biggest issues. It's like, if you want to talk about like some good things or like some silver linings, is that, you know, the Grizzlies were hanging around in that game all game, and much to the Pelicans' dismay, because they were letting them really. But the Pelicans hang around all game, and Ja Morant didn't really play well at all. Jaren Jackson Jr. ends up with 22 points, has a pretty good stat line, but really didn't turn it on to the fourth quarter. Like, Jaren have to understand, we talked about this on yesterday's show too, like, they have to understand, like, they got to turn it on from the start. They got to go from minute one. They don't have the luxury. This Grizzlies team doesn't have the luxury to have Ja Morant and Jaren just feel their way around the game until the fourth quarter. And then, like, oh no, they need me to step up now. Like, no, they need you to step up from the get-go. Like, Ja Morant has to realize that, you know, he can attack. Like, he can get to the bucket. And we saw it on several occasions in the game where he kind of got to the bucket effortlessly. And, you know, like Zion kind of did it too. Zion obviously was rewarded with a lot of foul calls. Like even before he even made contact with people, they were calling the foul, which is whatever. But Ja Morant's got to get to that position too. And the only way you get there and get those calls at the same time is to continuously do it over and over. If the refs know that's your game, they will be more likely to blow the whistle on you than not. Like if they understand that's what you're going to do, like they know what Zion is going to do. He's not going to shoot it from the outside. He's going to drive the basket as soon as he gets it. Like that's just what he's going to do. So they're ready to blow the whistle because they just assume that no one can guard him because they're going to have to create contact to be able to stop him at all. And so Drummond's got to understand the same thing. Like that's like, I know refs, well, people will say refs don't view it like that, but that's just not true. Like people have a reputation in a league for a reason, and their refs are only human. They know who these players are. They know what they do in every single game, and they react. And so Ja Morant's got to get to that space as well. I mean, he plays 39 minutes, shoots 5 for 21, scores 11 points. Like you want to take some good things away from this game is that Ja and Jaren, I don't think Ja and Jaren have looked good in really any game, like at the same time. I don't think that they've had that in any game yet. And I think that's, if you're looking for something to take away that you can feel good about, that's probably it.
Probably the closest that they looked, in my opinion, would be the third quarter of the Trailblazers game. You know, we had that over, yeah, I believe.
You're probably right.
Yeah, the 8 to 9 minute span. No, but I get what you're saying. You know, in terms of their ability to play just truly well, just clearly Jaren and Ja are playing well together. You haven't seen that a lot. I will say one development that you have seen, especially in the games, a chemistry between Clark and Ja. They didn't play that much together during the regular season, but that's clearly something that was there during the training camp set up before Orlando started. That's something that definitely is a good development. But another thing about Ja, you know, we talk about different offensive looks. You can call them wrinkles, schemes, whatever you may get. But if you have Ja bringing the ball up the court and just expecting him to penetrate or go one-on-one every single time, it's going to be easier for the defense to stop. So you've got to get different looks. You know, we saw in the first game that the Grizzlies played, a big, big thing that helped out the Blazers were high screens that their guards worked off of to either set up mid-range shots or then passes outside or at the three-point line. You know, it worked well for McCollum. It worked well for Dame and others as well. In the second game, we saw that they didn't use high screens that much as far as the Spurs go. The Spurs were just able to use good passing and, you know, these little nuanced off-the-ball movements to create space for their shooters and hit the shots. There has to be more of that for the Grizzlies. I know that Jaren is not that big of a guy, but he can at least set a screen. Setting a high screen to create space for Ja to work with to get to the basket. He can either then try for a scoring opportunity, get a foul, or make a pass. That's one option. Maybe passing to Kyle Anderson and using Jonas to set an off-the-ball screen for Ja to create space for him. That can create an opportunity for him to work with and then get to the basket the same different way, or, of course, through dribble penetration. But basically, the reason I mention that is that's three different ways in which Ja has the ability to gain space, get to the basket, and create scoring opportunities, either himself, getting to the foul line, making a pass down low to, you know, Brandon Clark, Jonas, whoever it may be, for them to get a score or get to the foul line, or passing it out for a good look from three. It's like you said, it's the penetration, but it's offering different looks of how to allow Ja to get that penetration that I think needs to be an added ingredient to the Grizzlies offense. If they can do that, that makes up for maybe the lack of talent that they have and the lack of options that they have to utilize right now.
Yeah, I think you make some good points. I mean, there's just, you know, there's only so much those two can do. Like when it really boils down to it, like if your two best players are not playing well and not scoring the basketball, I mean, what do you expect? Like this is where you're going to get. I mean, honestly, it's just what it is. And so until they decide to be the stars of the team and the two leaders, you're going to continue to get the same results. Let's take another quick break. Last break of the show. We'll come back and finish up in our last segment.
Say it with me. Sports are back. I've been waiting for this day since March, and now that it's here, I finally got one thing on my mind. MyBookie. MyBookie is a home run, a slam dunk, overtime game-winning shot, all wrapped into one. I love it, you love it, and that should be all you need to hear in order to start betting today. MyBookie has up-to-the-minute odds on all your favorite sports teams. And with the start of sports all over the place, there's never been a better time to start playing. With MyBookie, it's simple. You bet, you win, they pay. Feeling good about your team's chances this year? Be sure to check out MyBookie's World Series future bets. Nothing shows you believe in your squad like betting on them at the beginning of the season. But why stop with just baseball? Smart bettors are always looking towards the future. And in this case, that means basketball, hockey, and football. MyBookie is already accepting bets on all your favorite NBA, NHL, and NFL games as seasons are getting started and even before the season. Join today and MyBookie will match your deposit 100%. Plus, they'll toss you a free $10 MLB future wager. All you got to do is enter promo code LOCKEDONNBA when signing up. Remember, at MyBookie, the terms are simple. You bet, you win, they pay.
Welcome back to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Talking this Grizzlies Pelicans game, I do want to mention something that I think we saw a lot of yesterday because of the offense. And I only remember to talk about this because right before we started recording, I saw someone tweet about it. And it was the fact that a lot of people were just like, man, if the Grizzlies just had whenever they get that shooter, whenever they get that 20 points per game shooter, it's going to be different. And like, the Grizzlies have been looking for a knockdown shooter for like a decade, you know, like nothing in their current situation leads me to believe they're going to have a knockdown shooter next year. Nothing. Unless they go out and trade for somebody, and there's no reason to think they were going to do that right now. Because this front office is already been on record to say they're happy to be where they're at right now because they're currently rebuilding and this is just overachieving, which is fine. But the fact of the remains is that like knockdown shooters just don't grow on trees. Like if everybody just needed a knockdown shooter, they just got one, like it would just be super easy. Like there are very few knockdown shooters in this league. Very, very few. And so, like, I think just people just assume that, like, three-point shooters who do really well just, like, grow on trees and are just hanging out in the G League waiting to be scooped up, and it's just not the truth. Like, I did a little stat digging right before the show, and I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I'll ask you anyway. Do you know how many three-point percentage shooters there are right now in the league that shoot above 40%? I consider above 40% knockdown shooters because above 30% is basically below average. How many do you think? You might already see my tweets. You might already know this, but how many do you think there are?
On how many attempts are we considering?
Any attempts? Any attempts? Just above 40% players shoot above 40% from three in the league.
27.
There are 25 in the entire league, and that's counting all attempts. Not even like a lot of that. I think probably I'd say half of those are low volume guys. So you probably have 15, maybe less, pure knockdown shooters that can shoot the ball above 40% in this league right now. In the entire league right now. And people just think that we're just going to go grab one. Like, it's just, man, just go get one. No big deal. Like, it just doesn't work like that. That's not how the league works. I think people need to have a better grasp of what they're talking about getting. Like, if you just look at our roster right now, I mean, everybody shoots above 30%. Hell, I mean, Jaren Jackson is the best three-point shooter on the team. He shoots almost 40%. If you round, it's 40% if you round. On 6.5 attempts a game. But everybody else, Dylan Brooks, 36%. John Morant, 35%. Brandon Clark, we won't count him. But Josh Jackson's 31%. De'Anthony Melton's 30%. Grayson Allen is 37%. So, like, I think most people don't understand the percentages. And then they go, oh, well, would you consider Ja or Dylan or Grayson knockdown shooters? I think most people agree, probably not. And they all shoot above 35%. So, like, to really get someone knocked down shooter, you got to have someone in the 40s. And a lot of those people we talked about are the low 40s, like just barely 40. Like, at 25, Ben McLemore is a 25th player at 40.1. That's it. People have false expectations of what they're going to be able to get in terms of a shooter. There's a reason that the Grizzlies have been looking for one for 10 years.
The thing that I will say, though, and this is why when you talk about these potential trades, I honestly think there are a few trades out there. We'll probably have tons of shows in the offseason where we'll dive into that. But I think also the difference now for the Grizzlies versus what they had in the past is they have a coach in Taylor Jenkins who, yes, their talent may not be considered knockdown shooters, but Jenkins knows his roster enough to put them in situations where they can become that. A knockdown shooter is someone you think is going to sit there and hit 40% from every different angle in every different situation on the three-point line. I get that. Those are rare. Those are very hard to find, as you mentioned. That's why when the Grizzlies talk about adding who people, you know, see as knockdown shooters, you're talking about it costing Brandon Clark and multiple firsts. But what about Grayson Allen getting to the corner? Grayson Allen is in the 78th percentile of players at his position for making shots in the corner. So doing offensive schemes that free up Grayson Allen in the corner, he shoots a three. You saw it yesterday. Above the break, Brandon Clark is an unbelievably productive three-point shooter for a guy at his position. Him as a trailing big, or him as a pick-and-pop guy, shooting the three above the break, that turns him into a knockdown guy. So that's why, in terms of answering the question, the Grizzlies are just a shooter away, I don't think you sit here and sacrifice the future to get that proven knockdown shooter. Because the cost of bringing them in, having to pay the price in young assets, plus having to pay them, it takes away some of their value. They're very valuable, but if you've got to pay market value, plus you've given away a big chunk of your future, now that takes away from their impact. That's why I think that getting Taylor Jenkins more assets to work with and finding ways to bring in talent from the draft that also is controllable for Memphis. Memphis is in a position now to where it doesn't have to make that trade. It just doesn't make sense. You need to let things work out as it is. But the two things that are in place now are Taylor Jenkins and his ability to turn talents that may not always be knockdown shooters, but turn them into situations when they can be. That's one. The second thing is that the Grizzlies now have a front office that seems capable to draft good, like draft competently.
Yeah.
Plus, they know what to do with the finances, and people will want to stay here long-term with John Jaren. So if you bring in shooting talents from the draft, you've got them on long contracts at very, very good prices. Let them sit here, marinate with Taylor Jenkins for a while, and then let him develop their talent into shooting. That's why I think the Grizzlies need to be patient, and eventually they will find, you know, that their shooting weakness it will be minimized and hopefully become a strength.
Well, it's something that we've been talking about this entire show. This is a theme for the show, I guess you could say, is getting people in the right spots in this offense, putting people in the right positions to succeed, whether that's John Morant getting himself in the right spots, Jaren, or like you mentioned, getting someone like Grayson Allen in the right spots who, you know, quote unquote, is not necessarily a knockdown shooter on paper, but can make a lot of the shots in the position that he puts him in. You know what I mean? Like, it's a very good point. I think you're probably definitely right. Like, because I don't say this on trades, and then we'll end the show because we're running behind on time. But like, the trade thing is, like, I've seen there's a lot of people been talking about Zach LaVine out there. Like, if you think that you're going to just get Zach LaVine and not have to give up Brandon Clark, I mean, you're crazy. I mean, they're not going to just give up Zach LaVine. I'm sorry. Like, or you're going to go out and get Devin Booker and you're not going to give up Brandon Clark and Grayson Allen. That's not going to happen. Like, it's just not going to happen. And so a lot of people are like, well, let's just go trade for somebody, you know, trade for, you know, a Devin Booker like type of player. But that's great. You can do that, but you're going to give up a lot of assets you already have that, like you mentioned, are under your control for a long time. And so I think, you know, you don't just get to go get a star or, you know, an offensive star in this league and not have to give up something for it either. So I think you're absolutely right. Putting people in the right position to succeed goes a long way to put, you know, to increasing the perception of the shooting. And I think that's the ultimate issue right now, is that Dylan Brooks is playing terrible. I mean, there's just, everybody's playing terrible right now. And so that perception of having no shooting is also there. When, if you'd asked us, you know, in November of last year or December of last year, how's the shooting? Like, well, it's great. And Dylan Brooks is playing out of his mind. Like, you know, I think I made a few podcasts about how good Dylan Brooks was, you know, how much he was going to cost because he was shooting so well. You poll me right now about how Dylan Brooks, how much Dylan Brooks is going to get in his contract. And I think he's probably paid a little too much. So, you know, right now we're probably worried that his contract is probably good because it's right there in that sweet spot. So I don't know. I think you're right though. I think they got a long way to go. The Grizzlies play again against Utah on Wednesday. And you know, we talked about the math yesterday. They were still okay, but it's getting increasingly worse. The good thing is Spurs lost last night. Everybody that the Grizzlies needed to lose lost yesterday, and so we'll see how it goes from here.
Agreed, and that's the thing to do it. You know, we'll probably, you know, whether in the preview show for tomorrow or whatever, we'll probably break down the math. But everybody's three games in, and the Grizzlies are still multiple games ahead for the eighth spot, though I know that they have a harder schedule than several other teams that are following them. You know, I will say this, the Grizzlies, if they can just, since we're down to five games for everyone, all the Grizzlies need to do is really win two games. And they've got two matchups that they were bad matchups during the year for Utah and for Oklahoma City at times. We'll get into that in the previews, but I do think that it's going to be a fun matchup. Also, we'll talk about this later on in the week, but don't forget, over the next 3 to 4 days, matchups with the Jazz and the Raptors, you know, reunion tours with Mike and Mark coming up as well.
Yep, it's going to be awesome. And that Raptors game is going to be a throwback game where the Raptors are going to have their old purple dinosaur jerseys and the Grizzlies are going to have their teal jerseys. So that's going to be a serious 90s game. So I'm looking forward to it. Make sure you guys subscribe to the show. Make sure you get tuned in so you don't miss anything at all. We appreciate your subscriptions. We appreciate you guys listening. We appreciate the comments. So we'll see you tomorrow.